Asia sausage that is. Look at the state of it.
I shall also start recording now. I will push the button and make the thing work, and I can see lines. All right. So that is
nice.
Good.
And I will press recording on this thing. Wow.
Hey.
Technology.
Oh, look at that.
Well, fuck me.
The future is now, and I like
yes.
it.
Yes. We have been casted. It is very zen. Delightful.
I can feel the wash just relax, you know.
You can feel that you're washed. I mean, that's the default state for everyone on this podcast.
Yeah. I woke up this morning feeling like that.
Yes, you do that. Yeah. Parenthood, man. Parenthood. I've just discovered there's an option here for kick. I don't think that's what we want.
I mean, up the arse, perhaps.
I assume that's not like poking you on Facebook. I assume that means I'm talking to myself, which is, you know, as anyone's listened to the music podcast understands that that's the default state. Me generally talking to myself, shouting at Bezo for his bad takes. That was the last time we did one of these.
On assignment? Is that the euphemism that they we use? He's not here, he's on assignment?
He's drunk in a campsite up the coast somewhere.
So he's on his ass, right?
Yeah, he's probably
most of the way there.
Drinking someone's homemade moonshine, and he's going to be fire twirling and setting fire to the remnants of his pubic hair at some stage.
Oh, well, there's an image I don't think anyone really needed.
Well, I've said this before on this podcast, but every fucking podcast I listen to, it doesn't matter what the topic, seems to have an ad for manscaping, literally the company called Manscaped. Ironically, the only one I've heard that didn't do it was the Little Dum Dum Club, who are the grossest friggin' podcast in the universe. And they were shocked and horrified that somebody would send them free pubic hair trimmers. And they thought it was just absolutely ridiculous. Whereas you've got these very staid conservative basketball podcasters talking in great detail about their topiary habits.
Look, I imagine that more than a few of them have a lot of spare time in the bubble.
Yes, well, a lot of them are having less spare time because they're getting to go home pretty soon.
I admit I haven't really followed it all that closely. So
that's all right.
Where are we up to? Where are we up to?
We're up to the conference finals between the East and the West. But you don't have to worry about that shit. This is a Motorsport Nerd Pod. We haven't done one of these for a while.
We have not.
I've got the feeling the last one might have been Le Mans. It might have been Le Mans last year.
Last year? It might have even been the year before. I can't even remember.
I know we certainly did one.
It might have been after Le Mans the year before.
Yeah, we think we did one subsequent to that. So the second last one we might have done was the Le Mans with the pink pig. So I recall the cover art. Do you want to introduce yourself? Because I don't know what name you're going by on the internet these days.
Oh, look, I'll just go by Matt. How about that?
That'll do.
I used to be Bernie way back
yes.
when.
And you're definitely not on the internet anymore, which is good.
I'm definitely not on the internet anymore. Absolutely not.
Because
no
that would that
I would
be,
not be on that cursed website.
That, yes. The witch cursed websites. They're all fucking cursed websites these days. Every so often we get together and we talk motorsport nerd shit. And this is the Motorsport Nerd Pod on the Balls podcast. And, look at that calendar. It appears to be, having been scribbled over many, many times, it appears to be Le Mans week again.
It is. It's very exciting.
Yes. I think the ACO picked a really good year to have their shittest Le Mans in generations. Because this was always going to line up to be a shit because the Toyotas were the only factory left and there's like two non-factory LMP1 level prototype teams left.
Yeah, there's two rebellions and I think there's two rebellions and a Bicolis or something
yes.
on the entry list. It's
Colin.
The front of the field is particularly weak.
Yes, and they managed to piss off all the other... There's plenty of other teams that could have brought cars. I mean, Ginetta have cars they could have brought, but they managed to piss them off so much through the course of the last year. The Ginetta have literally just gone, fuck yous, we'll just go and do something else.
Yeah, it was always going to be the weird holding pattern year because they're supposed to launch the... whatever the next generation... The hypercars were supposed to launch at Le Mans... in
yeah.
June, but that didn't happen, and now what fucking state is any of that in at the moment?
Well, they've taken the opportunity to swap back to a calendar year season, which is because you know, with great fanfare they were announcing the super season, 24 months ago?
Or 18 months ago, whatever it was. It was Le Mans... Wait, last year's Le Mans was the end of the first Yes. Super season.
Yes. So it was like, yes. So it was the end of the
super season. And then, yeah. And then they were going to carry on. They had like sort of 2 months off and then started again. And this Le Mans is the end of like season one of the offbeat, whatever you want to call it.
I think they've got. I think they've got a couple more. They've because they're in the process of switching back to a calendar because they found out that the let's say the soccer year model fucked up everyone's business plans because everyone in racing works on a calendar year marketing budget plan. So people couldn't actually guarantee getting sponsorship for a last half of 1 year, first half of next year kind of forum. So they're going back to the original, the kind of calendar year format. So they've got a couple of events just to finish off the year, and then they're going to go back to being January to October again, or February to October again.
So after all that song and dance of Le Mans being the grand final or whatever they were fucking calling it of the season, it's now back to that race in June that sort of decides the season a quarter of the way through.
Yeah, it's exactly what's happened.
Cool.
They've gone straight back to what they were. And the problem is the races they want to start the season with are Sebring, which...
won't happen.
I don't want to go to Florida. You don't want to go to Florida. No, it should be... it makes more... It's given them an opportunity to back out of what seemed like a good idea, but it's turned out to be a terrible idea. And it looks like... I mean, there is a little bit more interest in this hypercar thing. I mean, Peugeot seemed quite keen to go there.
I think Peugeot have finally announced or confirmed some of their stuff now, which is nice to see because that was kind of up in the air for a while.
And true French shithousery, it was seen in the form of their old rivals at Renault announcing, oh, we're going to go as well. We're going to come racing as well. But what they're going to do is take the Rebellions, the LMP1 cars that were run by privateers, and they're going to run them as grandfathered LMP1s next year. And with the Signatec Alpine team, because Alpine are now Renault's, motorsport arm, effectively. They're going to rename the Formula One team Alpine. So Fernando Alonso is going to race for Alpine Formula One next year. Your guess is as good as mine as to why they thought that was a good idea.
It's been, they've been Renault for, 5 or 6 years now, after they were Lotus for a while, after some stuff in Renault. They were due for a name change.
Yeah, they get bored really quickly. They're like Puff Daddy. They can't go more than 3 years without changing their name to something even more ridiculous.
Maybe they'll lean a bit more, even further into the Bumblebee aesthetic that they've got going.
Well, no, they're going to dump all that and go with that kind of. I mean, the Signatec.
Or are they going to go with the Alpine sort of blue and orange?
Yeah, no, the sort of blue and tricolore kind of elements to it, and they're going to do that with the Formula One team as well. I guess the argument is going to be that as time goes on, the core car business of Renault is going to be more and more about boring electric, chariots that get you from A to B. So for people who are interested in sports, Alpine are going to be kind of the brand on the side that's going to be, it's just going to be like their kind of, enthusiast.
Their little performance arm, their
Halo brand.
Yeah, that's what I was sort of thinking of. I've got
no idea how that's going to work.
Bespoke artisanal.
Yes.
They're going to spend a lot of time explaining that it's actually just a Renault.
And that it's not Alpine. And it's got nothing to do with BMW Alpina.
Yeah. It's got nothing to do with Alpina. It's got nothing to do with where you sort of go skiing down the slopes.
It's got nothing to do with a brand of menthol cigarettes from the 80s.
Mm. It's Alpine. Alpinus.
Alpinus.
Alpinus, who is the team principal.
Isn't that what the rest of the commentary team called Alan McNish when he's not around?
Oh, can you imagine? They might have. No. Alan McNish seems like a lovely guy.
He does. Oh, I saw him and so he's doing the World Food Comms again this year with Martin Haven and Graham Goodwin, who are both of a height that is greater than your wee man. And they posed for a selfie. And very cruelly posted it, and all you can see is the very top of McNish's head. So that was what Haven did. What Goodwin did was tape McNish's favourite Tunnocks chocolate wafer bars that the Tunnocks make. The sort of caramel. They're like a really big Kit Kat. He got them and he taped it to the ceiling in the commentary box. Posted that. This is workplace bullying. I mean, I was just watching. There was a video last year that where they took Dumbreck, who was the one of the commentators, the extra people they bring in for Le Mans, and of course he was at the wheel of one of those Mercs that flipped 21 years ago. So it was 20 years ago last year, and they actually took him out to the site where the Merc flipped and went into the trees. And of course, he couldn't remember any of it, so it was kind of not really a big emotional breakdown. He's like, I've got no recollection of any of this. All I saw was a bit of sky, and then I was on a stretcher. But do you think that's workplace bullying, you know, inflicting trauma on people? It's nothing compared to taping your tunics to the roof.
They're going to go and take you and forcibly show you the place where you almost, well, where a car tried to kill you.
Yes.
It was at the end of the Mulsanne Strait heading into the hairpin on that rise, which...
Yes.
The one that you've seen the replay of. Everyone has seen the vision of the car disappearing off into the forest.
Yes. Well, the thing is, luckily the forest wasn't actually that great, because apart from right on the side of the track, where he landed had actually been clear felled relatively recently. And that's probably the reason he's still around. What a shonky design that was. I mean, they literally couldn't follow behind any other cars, which makes it really hard.
Twice, because it did it once to Dumbreck, and then
it did it once to Weber in practice, Weber. And he wasn't keen on it at all. Might have done it twice to Weber, actually. And they blamed Weber the first time, because they're Germans. Like, your car's fine, you are not precise.
You drove it wrong. You drove it wrong?
Yes. In Weber's biography, he was absolutely scathing about it. He said that was, you know, that was one of the worst experiences, and one of the most disappointing in terms of the way the team didn't support him until it was far too late, and by which time he was like, I'm never driving for you assholes ever again. You know, because he had to walk away from a factory Mercedes-Benz contract because he just didn't fucking trust them.
Yeah, well, I mean, that car was an absolute shocker. Absolute shocker.
I was a fucking skateboard.
The first time it sent him into the scenery, it was on the run from Indianapolis down to Mulsanne Corner, which is... Like, if you know Le Mans, it's not a particularly, like, fast bit of the road. It's like a short little squirty straight.
The run from Indianapolis to... Oh, from Indy to Arnage, or the run from the hairpin to Indy. Because I thought it was on the run down to Indianapolis.
No, I thought it was after Indianapolis, through there at Arnage, and somehow I managed to do it there, which, yeah, like, fuck that, I'm not getting back in that car. Good Lord.
No, that's not what they're designed to do. The fact the briefing they did was not to make any changes. It was... Try not to follow closely behind anybody.
Which is...
Good luck.
Good luck in a race with 60 fucking entries. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Have a nice time. So none of that's going to be happening on the weekend that we know of.
You never know.
Yeah. I think I was just talking to our mutual internet friend. I was trying to remember his handle. Oh, mate, the red line.
Oh, Mr. Anderson.
Yes. I was talking to our mutual friend, Mr. Anderson, and he was mentioning the fact that he couldn't find it on Fox, and the qualifying's not being shown on Sky over here.
It's not on Fox.
So the race at all is not?
No, because it's on Eurosport, and Eurosport is not carried on Fox anymore.
Oh, fuck off.
So I have spent 13 of my Australian dollars to buy it on the streaming app, and I've just noticed that as we're recording right now, Hyperpole.
I was going to say Hyperpole was on. Yeah, I used to do. I used to have a subscription, but then Sky started showing the races, and it was kind of what's the fucking point? I mean, they're not showing qualifying this year, which is new. Normally, they have been showing qualifying each year.
Yeah, well, Eurosport usually shows everything. So,
yeah, but they've got their own commentators who are appalling, don't they?
They do. They have their own commentators that are shit.
Yes.
But this year with the World Feed will be delightful, I
imagine. It should be better anyway. No, they're actually
find
getting...
find out tomorrow night when it starts.
They're getting better every year, the World Feed. I mean, they were sometimes a bit ropey. It used to be Hindoff and Goodwin, back when Hindoff's people hadn't completely shat all over Goodwin. It's been a weird parting of the ways between those guys because... Graham Goodwin and Marshall Pruitt have been doing their own podcasting. And once they did that, they got absolutely excommunicated from the Radio Le Mans team. Basically, the Radio Le Mans team just persona non grated them completely, which is a little bit petty, I would have argued. But yeah, they
has some really weird opinions about a lot of the sort of the back end production stuff that goes on.
Hindoff is loud wrong all the fucking time and is a really difficult commentator to listen to, I find.
Yeah, I sort of come around to that, like, the more you listen to, like, especially sort of after I got into Pruitt and Goodwin's podcast, I sort of stopped listening to whatever the Hindoff one is that's on every week. That also goes for way too long.
Yeah. And gets into radio-controlled cars and shit that no one gives a fuck about. And the guy, because they've kind of formed an allegiance with, is it that John DeGeese dude who does Sports Car 365? And he's loud wrong quite often as well, too. It's like the quality of the information is worse.
I just stopped listening to it. Especially, I haven't listened to basically any sports podcasts since lockdown because what the fuck have you got to talk about? Nothing's happening.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Although the Americans have gone straight back into it. They're IMSA-ing and all that sort of shit. No, it's...
I noticed IndyCar's back and I was looking... I watched the end of the first Mid-Ohio race last weekend and I was looking at the crowd going, ooh, that's not smart.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people standing very close together. Even though you're outside, that doesn't seem like a crash-on idea.
It seems like the Sam Newman plan. Basically, let's all just go out and have a crack and see what we end up coming home with.
Yeah, she'll be right.
Yes, all will be dead. Whatever. That seems to be the plan. But yeah, I was going to say the world feed there for a while after they got rid of Hindoff, they got Toby Moody in, who's probably better known as the guy who does a lot of the comms for the Goodwood Festival of Speed, and he was previously the MotoGP. Guy on Eurosport, I think it was. But I discovered a year or so ago that he blocked me on Twitter, and I have no recollection why. And I must have said something about the quality of his commentation.
You were drunk and belligerent on the internet, and he's blocked you. What a shock.
I guarantee I wouldn't have added him. He fucking absolute fragile man has clearly been vanity searching, found somebody saying, and I wouldn't have even just said he was crap. I would have said, I hope these guys grow into it, because it was the first year was a bit ropey. And then the next year he was relegated to being a backup commentator, and now he's not there at all. Because they were able to get Martin Haven across from Eurosport, and, you know, if you're going to have a world feed commentary, you might as well have Martin Haven on it because he does a fucking good job.
Martin Haven, Goodwin, and McNisha are, like, the three of them work well together. Mm.
The guys, last year they had Karen Chanduk and Dumbreck and Jamie Campbell-Walter, who's another Scottish endurance driver. So they had a pretty good lineup, actually.
Karen Chanduk is a lot of value. He's a very, very smart man.
Yeah, he's pretty good. They get him in when he's on Sky, but they also get him, he occasionally pops up on some of the race, some of their podcasts. Like they've got an occasional one called Bring Back V10s, which is just basically storytelling about shit that went down between 1989 and like 2006 in Formula One. So it's basically all just fucking random crazy shit stories. So he turns up
waxing lyrical.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit went down in that era, and I think because that's become the golden era for a lot of Formula One fans looking back. So there'll be an extra Penske on the grid for the final IndyCar race of the year, because your mate Jandals is going to finally get his wish and emigrate to America.
Is that what it was? I saw the headline on Speed Cafe, but I couldn't bring myself to read the story because I just don't give a shit.
Well, I just
he's getting his dream. Good on
I
him.
I know, and it's our dream too, because we just want him to.
He's an unlikable turd.
We just want him to go. Just fuck off.
Just fuck off.
He's like, he's the flatmate who's you know, said he was moving out and has then just said no and ended up fucking staying for an extra year. And just by the stage, just fuck off. Everything you do, everything you say, just the sight of your shit-eating fucking grin makes us want to punch you. Can you just leave? We've had enough.
He's going to complete his transformation into Marcus Ambrose, and it just cannot happen quickly enough.
Hey, Marcus Ambrose won things occasionally. Actually, I think McLaughlin's got... I think McLaughlin's going to be actually pretty good in IndyCar, which I think will reflect well on the series.
He did a test already before the whole thing, and he did all right.
Penske thinks he's a fucking driving god. They love him. I mean, they're already talking about the fact is this is just a dress rehearsal. He'll be back next year in a fourth Penske because they've got the spare capacity because Penske are shutting their sports car team because they've had the contract to run Acura, you know, Honda sports cars. But now Honda want to run those cars as like a customer racing sort of model where they supply it to teams and the teams run it rather than funding a factory team. And Penske are like, well, we don't do that. You know, you pay us to go racing or we don't go racing. So they're going to have spare capacity in their larger racing group, and they can probably manage to run a fourth IndyCar for McLaughlin rather than, because the problem was like Power's been really competitive this year. Pagano's been really competitive this year. I mean, he won fucking Indy last year. And New Guns, the reigning champion. So it wasn't like they were going to ship out any of their three guys to get McLaughlin in, but they're really, really keen to get McLaughlin in. So
good on him.
And he's born to be a Penske driver because he's just a boring punisher. So it's perfect.
He fits right in, doesn't he?
He does. He's perfect for them. God, I hate Penske. They're like the Mormon racing team. They're just so fucking punishingly boring. They're not allowed to even grow facial hair. I mean, what kind of fucking cult are you running in there?
Hasn't they also been chucking a tanty over the whatever the Gen 3 supercar things are because they don't want it to be something and they'll just say they'll walk, which they're going to fucking do anyway. So
I mean, who cares? Who cares? I mean, it's now that Holden have gone it and there's one manufacturer left, it's kind of like, well, one manufacturer isn't going to hold this series up. So you either have to watch the series disintegrate or just have your business model based on the fact that you don't need manufacturers. And that's basically where they are. I mean, all the manufacturers are is a sponsor. They don't actually supply any parts. They do a bit of act. They're just a really good sponsor. They do good activations. They've got a strong brand equity, but they're not like, you know, a tire manufacturer that actually provides you with something useful.
Yeah. I don't know how long Supercars is going to keep going.
Well,
because they're not.
I think it'll keep.
I don't feel like they have a plan.
I don't think they'll keep going indefinitely, but it won't be. It'll just migrate into being whatever the new. I mean, it's not like they're going to be replaced by TCR or something. They'll just move into being something slightly different, and they'll still be the premier racing series in the world, in the country, because there's a market for that in the Australian sports landscape. I mean, the supercars. I mean, even without Holden and, you know, back to just being Ford versus nobody and it all just being a bunch of teams fighting against each other, I mean, they're still basically the third highest rating sport on Foxtel in this time of year. I mean, if you throw in cricket, then that's another issue. But, I mean, they outrate two football codes comfortably. I mean, I saw some stat from Richard Crail on Twitter that the Hyundai XL support car race from Townsville outrated the A-League Grand Final.
I didn't know that. I missed that.
Now, I'm not sure I believe that stat, but I'm not sure I don't believe that stat.
There'd be like 55 cars in that race. If I was home, I would have fucking watched it.
Yes. But you still don't expect it. You still don't expect it to outrage fucking Sydney FC versus Melbourne City, I think they'll play. I mean, Melbourne City have no fans.
No, but you know, as I was saying in other media commitments, that you only remember the FFA actually exists when they do something fucking stupid.
Yes, like get a new women's Matilda's away jersey design and then not have it ready in women's sizes for another 2 years. I mean, but also, how did Nike fuck that up? I mean, Nike's job is to make fucking football shirts. It's literally what they do.
I guarantee you there was a discussion behind the scenes where Nike's gone, oh, so we'll do this with women as well. And the FFA's gone, no.
What would you need that? Women don't go to the football.
What would you need that for? Women don't watch the football.
No. Women don't watch the soccer, mate.
Especially not the women's the football.
Not any hot chicks either. It's only big chicks and they can wear men's sizes, eh? I don't know why I'm talking like an extra from Fat Pizza, but, you know. Guido Hatzis' fucking head injured fucking brother.
It's a bad code.
Cultural fucking stereotyping.
It's a bad code. I don't know why that code still exists. No one cares. Does anyone care? I think about 14 people total care.
15, including me.
Okay.
This is why we have you on for the motorsport podcast.
But does Wellington still have a team or are they still fully up the shit?
Still got a team. I mean, that team had to spend fucking 9 weeks in the bubble. And it's not surprising that by the end they just went. But yeah, they were in the semi-finals, which is more than they've done for a long time. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, it's a bit of a... If you say supercars is going to be struggling to survive, just look at the state of every other fucking sporting code in Australia. Even the AFL are stumbling from shitfight to asshat explosion on a weekly basis. Cricket, I mean, cricket's major television partner, major free-to-air television partner is trying to constructively dismiss them with their own contract. Rugby league is rugby league, or rugby league. Rugby union barely exists. So it's kind of, I think all professional sports, being as though they are basically forms of entertainment, are going to struggle for a long time.
Yeah, this was coming, like, outside of what happened this year, this sort of like reckoning in terms of the value of what these codes offer and what they were expecting to get in sort of TV rights was absolutely coming, because there's no fucking way the AFL is worth $1 billion a year or whatever the fucking TV deal is.
No, it's like, not. And
on any fucking scale is it worth that much.
Well, there's two competing factors there, though. You've got the fact that in a world of Netflix and on-demand everything, the one thing that is appointment viewing that you have to turn up and watch at the time and you know, sit through any ads that are put in front of you is televised sports, because that, you know, it's not, you can't watch that on demand. Well, you can, but you can't watch it live on demand. Having said that, the number of people who are interested in doing that is decreasing because of all the on-demand shit that you can do. So they're chasing... They're trying to prop up a dying model, you know, free-to-air television primarily and subscription television, with the one thing that you can't get anywhere else, but it's just that less and less people are that compelled to watch that thing.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly speaks true for me. Like, I watch far less than I have previously, and a lot of it is because, like,
parent.
So like Formula One. I haven't watched a single fucking Grand Prix this year.
This is also why we haven't done a motorsport
because they're on at 11 o'clock at night, and I don't want to stay up, and they also put a decent highlights package on YouTube.
Yeah, that's actually not too bad.
And when you...
I just watch them on demand.
The highlights package, it's 8 minutes long. It's 8 minutes long, the highlights package, and the first five laps take up 6 minutes. You know, not much else happened in the rest of the race. So even last week's race at Mugello, which was apparently, by all accounts, amazing and stupendous and completely fucking...
No, it just had a lot of stacks. So it probably needed about 16 minutes. Monza probably needed the full 8 minutes.
They did, for Mugello, was like an 8-minute clip. And 7.5 minutes was up until that red flag on like lap 9 or 10, whenever it was.
They had a deadline to meet. They had to cut it together quickly. So they did it all to start with. Now, there's been a lot of shit races this year in Formula One, but there has been the occasional, you know, just Pierre Gasly wins, narrowly beating Carlos Sainz sort of days.
Yeah, I need to go back and actually watch the Monza Grand Prix. I watched the highlights of it, and it looked like a pretty interesting affair, but I don't want to stay up till 11 o'clock to watch a fucking procession.
Oh, diddums. I'm just 2 hours further on here.
Yeah,
which is why I watch it entirely on demand. You know, next day I get up and I put it on in the background while I'm doing something else. I can't even stay up late enough to watch MotoGP because that starts at about midnight.
I get far more enjoyment out of watching F3 and F2 because the racing is just tremendous.
There's lots of violence and stupidity.
And there is lots of violence and stupidity, and it's what I want. And it's on at a reasonable hour of the evening, so I can watch it live. It's great.
And Australians and New Zealanders seem to be doing really well.
They do really well, especially at F3.
Yeah, well,
there's a lot of them.
Piastri's the champion. Armstrong was narrowly missed out on the championship not too long ago. Mitch Evans is a former champion.
Liam Lawson
won the last race.
He's there or thereabouts as well.
He's pretty good. I saw him race at because the Toyota Racing Series is kind of that off season thing. Another thing that's going to struggle with the economies of COVID, I can't see a whole bunch of...
The grid for that's going to be interesting in January.
I suspect it might not even run, because you're not going to find, you know, they're all pay drivers effectively. They all pay to basically buy a space on the grid for the year. I suspect the series won't even run because no one can come in the fucking country. And they only usually have like 3 or 4 New Zealand drivers. So I think the TRS might be on pause for the year. But I saw him at Highlands just Do you know when you just see someone by how stupid they make everybody else look, you think, wow, that guy's just got ridiculous amounts of talent. He just made everybody look stupid, including Marcus fucking Armstrong, who was factory Ferrari scholarship kid. And Lawson around a track where you can't fucking pass. He just monstered his way through the field and cleaned up in this race. So, and it is interesting with that Toyota Racing Series, how many of those kids you see pop up in F3 and F2, or even F1. I mean, Lando was a champion in Toyota Racing Series. Lance Stroll was a champion in Toyota Racing Series. Kvyat was in that series. You know, lots of them have actually have graduated through that. That's actually the one reason I think Lance Stroll isn't a complete muppet, is because I saw him race and he was actually, his problem isn't that he's slow. His problem is that he's a bit kind of Gilles Villeneuve, you know, not Jacques Villeneuve, in that he was wearing oversized pants and is a bit of a twat. It's that he doesn't know how to rein it in more than he can't go fast enough.
Yeah. I remember it was a year or two ago, his debut year, he scored a podium at Azerbaijan. A brilliant drive.
Yeah. And the same year, he started on the front row in Monza because it was a wet qualifying and he just went fucking red mist. So he's definitely capable of... he's outdriven Sergio Perez this year. I mean, other people saying, Sergio Perez got sacked because Lawrence Stroll's not going to fire his son. His son has done a better job in the same car all year. Even if you take out the couple of races that Perez missed because he had the COVIDs, it's kind of like, well, there's no justification for not keeping Stroll over Perez.
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you? He's solid. He'll come good eventually.
Yeah, he's improving every year, and his dad owns the team, so you know it's. It's going to happen, you know. But how many other pay drivers are in the series? I mean, it's not unforeseen. There's going to be another one too, because the kid Mazepin, the kind of weird bald Russian kid, probably find out he's got some kind of rare condition.
Nikita Mazepin.
Yeah. So the Mazepin family own Ural Chemi, which are a big sponsor of a whole bunch of the junior formulas, and they're looking at buying one of the Formula One teams if they can get into the market for it. I think they were sniffing around Williams. They're also looking at some of those other teams that are, you know,
they'll be a cheap pickup soon.
Yeah, a bit iffy on their stuff. So there's been a lot going on in Formula One, but most of it's boring shit, like, you know, teams are getting bought and
Williams is no longer Williams or whatever
they're
going to be called next year.
Well, it's still going to be Williams. They want to keep the brand because the brand's important. Just the same. I mean, the same way that Bernie Eccleston kept the name Brabham when he bought Brabham in the early 70s. You know, it's you got to keep the name because the name is what buys you credibility. It's a lot less cynical than, you know, the people who used to be Renault, just when they got bought, and then they just sort of bought the brand of Lotus and stuck it on the car, and it was as much of a Lotus as, you know. I can't think of a convincing metaphor. It wasn't a Lotus in any way, shape, or form. It just had a black and gold paint job and the logo stuck on the car.
Yeah.
It was totes fake. Danny Rick's off to McLaren next year?
That I am actually looking forward to. I think he and Norris, interesting things could happen because that's a team that has started to come good.
It has.
Finally.
But
they're finally, like McLaren has spent a lot of time in the wilderness. They're finally starting to point in the right direction. They've got a young hotshot in Lando Norris, who is probably going to be a world champion at some point. And Danny Rick, who's not going to be the world champion. But I reckon he will.
Well, here's the problem.
I'm not going to put beer on it, but...
No, the reputation of this podcast is that people lose a lot of beer when they bet against me, and we're not going to do that. But science is... handily dealt with Norris. I mean, the qualifying's been close, but in race spec, he's been pretty much. I mean, science has the confidence that he's going to Ferrari, and not that Ferrari is a place you necessarily want to go to, but it's still a big thing to be asked to go and drive for Ferrari. So just the way that Norris has been handled by Danny Rick, by science, and also the way that Norris clearly. I mean, I think this is true with a lot of the drivers on the grid. They kind of look up to Danny Rick because he's the cool older brother of that whole generation of the the Norrises and the Verstappens. I mean, even Verstappen, who was probably, you know, let's be fair, marginally quicker than Danny Ric, although Danny Ric is as close as any teammate has ever been to Verstappen. They still look up to him like he's, you know, this cool older brother, and they just didn't want to find out what music he listens to and what fucking jeans he buys. So I think he's going to have precedence over Norris because of those elements. And also the way that Danny Ric has completely put Esteban Ocon, who was the equal of Verstappen in Formula 3, he's just basically just folded up Ocon's career and just said, no, you just hang on to that, mate, because you're not better than me and you won't be better than me.
Yeah, I mean, Ocon never, that sort of junior Formula talent and sort of prospect never really translated into Formula 1.
No, he just had that kind of misfiring year with Force India, didn't he? The only recollection I have of it was him.
Yeah, he had a couple of really mediocre years. But he's kind of like, he kind of feels like that. I've got to think, who's the Brisbane Big Bash? Chris Lynn, right? Really, really good at the domestic level.
Yeah.
Like, so your junior level just shits all over everyone in the BBL. But as soon as he moves up into international cricket, it's just not quite there for him.
He's a flat track bully. So what you're saying is Ocon should be really good at Silverstone. He needs a nice flat track. But yeah, my main recollection of Ocon's year at Force India was him and Perez piling into each other in one of those fucking nutbar Azerbaijan Grand Prix. Like they smashed.
They did
each that. Other
I think they also that. Piled into each other on the run down to Rouge at Belgium.
Yeah, they did a lot of that. They just pulled. It's like it's just a thing they did. The Ocon crashing into people who he shouldn't be crashing into. Almost fucked his career doing that. So he should be thankful to be French and in a team that is French. He's gonna have to get used to having his ass handed to him though, because Alonso is not gonna be slower than him. Alonso has ended ended the Formula One careers of you know even more highly rated drivers than him. I mean, remember that Formula Two, was it Formula Two at that stage or GP2? That Stoffel van Dorn's championship year in let's say it was GP2 at the time, where he just won basically race.
It was GP2.
Yeah, and he won pretty much every race. I think it was like the last year of GP2. So it was like 2014 or 2015. But I mean, Stoffel's not getting his Formula One career back after he just got destroyed by Alonso. Not in an unpleasant way. He just got beaten, you know, like 18-0 in qualifying sort of thing. It's like, well, okay, that's not going to happen, is it?
That's one of those things. You get paired with like one of the greatest drivers in a generation, and you get your ass handed to you week after week after week. And you just go, well, what were you going to do? And I think Stoffel's now in DTM. So
what you were going to do was go and do something else. You're going to go and race. Now, Formula E, which is like the new DTM for where you park the not quite right or the not quite ready.
Washed out F1 drivers.
Yes. They're not quite good enough. And we haven't quite checked yet. It's interesting because
for some reason have a manufacturer driving contract.
Yeah, I follow quite a bit of Super GT and Super Formula, and of course Nick Cassidy has the young Kiwi has a Toyota deal over there, but he's going Formula E when the Formula E season starts, because Formula E season runs that summer season in our schedule anyway, and he seems very keen to get out of his Super GT and Super Formula stuff and get out and start racing Formula E. And I'm like, careful what you wish for, because those Formula E cars look shit to drive. And Super GT is one of the best series in the fucking world.
The problem is I don't think anyone in Europe watches Super GT.
No, I got the feeling he would really like to be famous.
The problem is a lot of people in Europe watch Formula E. The problem is with Formula E, it's like trying to fucking succeed at Dodgem cars.
Yeah, they've just taken off the cables and they've just run them around a fucking. It's kind of
run around a little Mickey Mouse circuit around an industrial park somewhere, and that's apparently.
Well, I know you used to do this. You'd look at like cities and try and imagine where you could have a racing circuit. It's like the ultimate evolution of that, but it also includes the fact that these people who are designing the tracks have paid no fucking heed to whether it makes a decent track for racing. It's just, can we fit something you can race around in this scenic bit of town that we can show on the television? And whether it actually produces good racing or not is fucking irrelevant.
It's a whole series designed around the aesthetic of the Newcastle supercars race.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking of.
then we'll do it. Is it good for racing? Doesn't matter.
Now, the Newcastle Street Circuit would produce a tremendous Formula E race, though, wouldn't it? It'd be perfect for them. They'd be running out of gas, running out of electrons halfway up the hill. Here's the only problem. They'd want to sponsor it with coal, and I don't think that's the look that Formula E are going for. They're like, yeah, the new green future, coal-burned electricity. It's like, oh, Jesus. You fucking backward ass.
It's gas now, isn't it?
We're going to take
the coal-fired power station out of Liddell and put it in the fucking paddock and fire it up to charge the cars between sessions.
Just run a whole lot of fucking extension cords. They should leave the cords plugged in and it would be like a Dodge and car circuit. Actually, isn't gas the thing now? Isn't that what your mate ScoMo is all into these days? Trying to get everyone to produce lots of gas? Burn some gas.
Oh yeah, it's our green future is building gas power plants in the Hunter Valley. Yep. No, we're there.
Slightly it's... brownie green. Yes. No.
Don't breathe in.
No. What's that sulfury smell? It's not really what you're looking for. Oh, has anybody got the hyper poles yet?
I'm looking at the moment the number 7 Toyota of Kamui Kobayashi.
He's a bell end.
And who else was in that car? Mike Conway and Jose Lopez. Maria Lopez. Yeah, is currently on the pole by half a second over the number 1 Rebellion of Gustavo Menezes, Norman Nato, and Bruno Senna.
That's closer than they were, because in free practice they were like 4 seconds off the pace. Of course, the 7 is the bad one. We don't like that one. Just because Hartley's in the other one.
Well, the number 8 Toyota is in 3rd.
Yeah, that would make sense. That's the... because the number 8 one
Sebastian
is...
Sebastian Buemi, Kaz Nakajima, and your man Brendan Hartley.
Yeah, that's the X... that's the former Alonso mobile.
Yes.
But it's got the flatmates in it. Because Buemi and Hartley, when they were both in the Red Bull program back in the day, they were flatmates. And that would have been a good premise for a sitcom, I think. Because those two dudes, you just can't imagine sharing a house.
The, the junior formula driver, bro, share house sitcom. Fucking, oh, wow. That'd be special.
What else is going on? So you haven't watched any fucking motorsport, which makes the Motorsport Nerd Pod premise a little bit flawed. But
I've watched a bit of the supercars. Not that I really am particularly thrilled about how that's gone.
Yeah, it's been... Well, the thing is that they've been running these sort of not quite enough tyres, so it randomises the results sort of thing. And the problem is that it kind of gives you results where you watch a race and you go, well, I don't even know what that was. Was that reflective of anything? Or was that just a whole bunch of random shit?
Yeah, they do a
Nick Percat
really
won 2
poor
races.
Job. Yeah, I know. How? Why?
It appeared to be on pace.
They do a really bad job of explaining how. Like, I kind of get the idea about limiting the tires, and you've got a strategy. You've got to sort of like run your strategy over. You know, like imagine it's a 3-hour endurance race as opposed to 3 1-hour sprints,
and you've got to figure out where you're going to double stint.
They do a really bad job of explaining that.
That's because they're not. I mean, for all their fucking getting a yield and, you know, your cleanest dirty shirts and all these fucking spiffy phrases they love rolling out between Scaife and Crompton, they're not good at actually explaining things sometimes.
No, also the
target audience is thick, so they're not really going to get it.
The target audience...
Oh, James, he's my favourite.
The whole thing just needs a broom run through it and to be rebuilt from scratch, but... They
there's no budget for that though. They're going to be running ZB Commodores with the badges taken off them for the next 3 years. I'm not reporting that. That's just my guess.
Like the other problem is too, like, is that remember the first year that Formula One introduced like the 2 compound of tires, and they had like the soft one was delineated by like a small white circle on the wall of the tire.
Oh, look, and it lasted about I think four. it was so long ago that it was still groove tires. So they actually had like a white, one of the grooves was white because they just ran a groove on the tire itself, and because it was in the groove, it wouldn't wear out. I've got a strong recollection
until
of
it
that.
Did.
Well, you'd have to run them
something
bald.
Like that. But they do that. But they like. There's nothing visual that you can see to see when people are riding the off tire, like either the hard or the soft. So you can't like look at it and understand that going. Oh, he's slow because he's running the hard tire. It's just like they're all just running fucking.
Yeah, but even when they're running the same compound, there's no reporting on how old the fucking tire is. So there's like, okay, McLaughlin has had to qualify on fucking old, worn out soft, so he's going to suck in this race. Or, you know, I mean, there is actually I think the sidewalls are different. I think one of them has a yellow sidewall and one of them has a white sidewall.
You
or
can't
I might
fucking see
up.
It on the TV.
No, you can't, because as soon as they rub up against a wall or something, it cleans the sidewall off.
Yeah.
But the thing is that I know this is expensive and it's Michelin proprietary tech, but in WEC, they just run everybody past a fucking RFID unit at the end of pit lane and they know exactly what the tyre is, what the compound is, and how long it's been on the car. So they can tell you immediately.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, they do the same thing in Formula... Well, I mean, they do the same thing in Formula 1, except it's really, really fucking obvious when you look at the tyres which ones are red, which ones are yellow, and which ones
yes.
are white.
And which ones are graining like a motherfucker. They're the ones on the Mercedes whenever it gets hot.
You just can't see who's on what tyre or know who's on what tyre because, yeah, they just don't get it.
No. Well, the thing is that you watch all this shit and all this sort of stuff happens, and then you look at what's going on in MotoGP, which is having one of the most incredible seasons I can recall leading on from, and possibly as a result of, Marc Marquez throwing himself down the road and then somehow claiming that he bent a titanium implant by opening a window and his doctor was shit, which is, you know, a thing you could do, I suppose. Throw the leading fucking orthopedic surgeon in Europe under the bus because you did something fucking stupid with your titanium implant. But it's actually, MotoGP has been amazing this year.
I'm going to admit, I really have not watched any of that aside from the replays of them throwing motorcycles at Valentino Rossi.
That was terrifying. That was fucking terrifying. But the racing has been amazing because it's a fucking thing that four-wheel motorsport has gone away from. But every one of those leading bikes has strengths and weaknesses, and they play out differently on different circuits. The Ducati and the Honda are big V4s that go like stink in a straight line but don't turn that well. And the across-the-frame fours, like the Yamaha and the Suzuki, can't compete in a straight line as much, but they are tremendous handling bikes. The new KTM is kind of a hybrid because they've got a V4 that kind of handles, that has got some of the characteristics of an inline four. So everywhere you go, something different is happening. They're at Misano for the second week of a back-to-back, and it's a track where the Yamahas and the Suzukis are just loving it, and the Ducatis are just really trying to fucking struggle along to hang in there. But, you know, next week when they go to fucking, I think it's probably Catalunya or somewhere, you know, the Ducati's going to be bopping down that straight again, and it's going to be it's going to be different winners again. So it's exactly that element of having different capabilities and, you know, a trade-off between different performance levels that a lot of these kind of spec-leaning series have moved further away from. And it doesn't make it as entertaining.
I don't know, because like F3 and F2 are spec and those races are tremendous everywhere.
Yes, but that's because you've got people trying to kill each other to get a job. And also because they've got fucking DRS, which is the dumbest shit in the world. But it does at least guarantee that you can't get away from people because they can always drive past you on the straight.
Yeah, I mean, yes, MotoGP is going to Barcelona next year. Probably will go the next year
week.
As well.
I think World Superbike is in Barcelona this week. Because there's a lot of... I understand why, you know, you haven't been watching motorsport because there's been so much of it on. It's impossible to keep up with it. There's just so fucking much. Everything happens so much.
Well, the problem is every time you turn something on, they're all talking about, like, the championship. And it's just like, I don't give a shit.
Who knows?
Like, this is the 1 year. Championships don't fucking matter. Just give me entertainment.
Nothing matters. We're all in lockdown. Well, we're not in lockdown, but you know, the world is in lockdown. Nothing actually matters.
Are you in lockdown? What's happening in New Zealand?
Nah, we're fine. I mean, we're fine in my corner of New Zealand. Auckland, we're at level 2 for a bit. Level 3, sorry. Which way do they go? 3 is higher. Auckland were at level 3 for a bit because they had a little breakout. I think it was something like some of the cooties came over on some freight from overseas, and it was handled and it wasn't contaminated.
I recall
before it was
that
handled.
Being the initial suspicion, but I thought that was kind of, well, anyway, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, I haven't looked into it enough because I'm like, oh fuck, here we go again. But no, we've been okay.
If it's far enough away from you that it doesn't matter, then that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I work in a small office with other people, so and the it's in an old building, the office that I work in. So, and the space is too small to actually distance properly. So I'm actually working from home at the moment, but I'm actually that agrees with me quite well because I can watch replays of Formula One races on Monday mornings and Tour de France stages and all that sort of stuff. Actually,
you could do all the fun stuff that I used to do when I was working at home. Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss working at home. Working at home was fun.
It's not the worst game in the world. I mean, I still get the work done. I've been incredibly productive under this format. It's just I also completely up to date with what's going on in Latour and European football and the NBA and Christ, I even watched a Browns versus Bengals NFL game today.
Why would you subject yourself to that?
Because it was on. Because don't you want to know whether fucking Joe Burrow is going to be the next, what's the other bloke's name? Brady thing? I can't even remember the name of the Browns quarterback, and I literally just watched him play. I wanted to say Lakey Peterson, but that's a girl surfer from California.
That is.
She's really good. She's actually really good.
From
but that's
as football quarterback as you can get.
Yes. No, I can't remember the dude's name. Fucking hell. Anyway, clearly highly relevant to remember the name of the fucking Browns quarterback. Scream it at your speaker, folks, if you know the name.
They might actually win a game this season. Who knows?
Unlikely. Actually, no, they did. They won today. Because they beat the Bengals, who are awful. The Bengals were the worst team in the league last year.
Really? So they're more awful than the Browns?
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about American football, but the Browns are shit.
Yeah, but the Bengals were the worst team in football last year. They got the number one pick, which is how they ended up with this Joe Burrow, who was the best quarterback in college football last year.
Exploito ball.
Even more exploito than normal this year with the fact that not only are they not getting paid, they're all getting fucking COVID.
America's going to fall. It's going to be
America's hilarious. America's, well, it's not going to fall because that suggests somebody else is going to go and take it over. And I don't think anybody wants the hassle. I think they're just going to let it kind of just festate. And, you know, not really bother about it and just sort of push it to the side and pretend it doesn't exist. Except for Scott McLaughlin.
We weren't here to talk about politics.
Except for Scott McLaughlin, who's desperate to move there. And he's welcome to it.
Yeah.
We'll have to change his name to Flip Flops or something. What are they called, Jandals over there?
They probably suspect a Jandal is some sort of sandwich.
Some kind of ridiculously sugary candy you that's full of high fructose corn syrup that you give away on Halloween with COVID.
Can you candy a sandwich? Like a candied sandwich?
Of course you can.
I'm sort of imagining it as sort of thing where it's just like fried, like French toast, bacon, marshmallows.
This feels more Scottish than anything.
Just a fuck off amount of cheese. It's just got to have cheese.
Yeah.
And sort of like the Stoffel Van Dorn, just a fuck off amount of meringue.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going.
I think you've just designed the next thing for the concession stands at the St. Petersburg Grand Prix of St. Petersburg for when Jandals goes over there and either gets himself a full-time gig or thoroughly embarrasses himself and guarantees that no one from Australian Motorsport will ever get another gig somewhere else. Either way, it's a win.
That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. We could stop inflicting ourselves on other series.
I mean, one way or another, it's a win. I mean, either he goes forever or he has to come back. And having failed, which is also kind of funny.
Well, I mean, is his choice between being the Marcus Ambrose who went over there and stayed?
And was all right.
Or is his choice part of the furniture? Like the more Craig Lowndes model where you went over there, you tried, you ran out of money, didn't quite work out for you and you had to come back.
Yeah, I don't feel like that. I feel like he got over that relatively quickly. Whereas I don't think, because McLaughlin's whole personality and identity is tied up with the fact that he really wants to be in America. I mean, he married an American girl. He's changed. He's, if you look at the McLaughlin that was at GRM compared to the McLaughlin at Penske, he has completely remodeled himself to be that Penske guy, to be that clean shaven, you know, absolutely respectable corporate spokesperson. He fits their model perfectly, so he's ready to go. I mean, the most ridiculous thing was when he whinged about SVG running in wide in that corner in Townsville so Jamie could get past, and he said he complained that the move was pretty average, and everyone said, oh, fuck off, mate. Your teammate blocked everyone else off so that you could win a Bathurst last year. And then he was sort of saying, well, you know, it's not fair because people are always saying they want us to have personalities and say things. And I'm like, mate, you don't have a personality. You aren't capable of saying things. What the fuck are you even talking about?
Hopefully he just goes and that'll be it. Yeah. That'll be the end of it. We'll never have to hear of him ever
again. He'll be there somewhere.
A living hope.
He'll be driving GT sports cars for some fucking pro-am team.
Will he win the Indy 500 before Fernando Alonso?
I mean, Fernando Alonso is not going to get another crack at Indy for a while because he's got a full-time job. The day job is claiming him back. Tom would have thought probably.
I really don't understand why he's coming back to F1. Like, why the fuck would you bother?
Because you can drive an F1 car and get paid a shitload of money. I mean, that still sounds like more fun than doing whatever else he was going to be doing. I mean, he was faffing about. I think what he did was he did all those scratch-the-itch things like the Indy 500 and the Dakar and Le Mans, and then he's like, I'd really like to just drive a Formula One car because that seems to be better than all the other shit. I don't have to get up at 2 a.m. and sit in someone else's piss in a fucking Toyota hybrid and bash down a fucking French auto route. I could see the appeal.
I kind of thought he was just done and ready to fuck off and just sort of chill out.
I think he was done fucking grinding his balls on the floor in order to finish 11th. I think he was done with that, but I think he can see that Renault are putting a bit of effort behind this. And, you know, McLaren have looked pretty good, and you can see why Danny Rick has made that move, but there was some interesting, particularly around Spa. That Renault looked really good in low drag trim. So I don't think Renault are going to be that far away. It's going to be more like that year that Alonso went back to Renault after the McLaren thing crapped out. And he's going to have to, he's not going to be a title contender, but he's still a fair chance of, you know, he might still 1 or 2 on the break.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing too next year is that they're going to be running the same cars.
Pretty much, yeah.
They've kind of got 12 months to sort of get themselves organised. They're like an extra 12 months of development on the 2022 car that they might not have had. So.
And it looks like this is the first time Renault will actually care and pour money into it, so it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, well, they'd want to if they've paid for Alonso to come back. So.
True. Although he might not be that expensive now, since he's just doing it for the joy.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Lewis Hamilton being the greatest of all time? Because he's about to be statistically that. I'm
kind of weird, because I still remember him being just an insufferable asshole.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of is still...
I get that he's growing up.
He's still a bit of a twat. But he's, you know, his politics is sound, and he's doing some ballsy things in terms of challenging some of the more kind of conservative stereotypes around the sport. And he's difficult to like because he's like a caricature of a US sports star, you know, with his overt religiousness and his, you know, tats and all the stuff that you'd expect to see from a starting point guard on an NBA conference finals team, not from a Formula One guy. But a lot of that is our own cultural cringe because we've watched this very, very white sport all our lives, and there's a dude who is very, very not white in the way that he conducts himself. But he's also a bit of a twat, and that's a bit hard to get around.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to fault him. Like, he's done a lot of very good things over the last, you know, sort of since F1 came back, really. Yeah. Sort of all the way back, tracing back to Austria a couple of months ago.
He's been their moral compass in a lot of ways.
You know, and like it's sort of one of those things where it's kind of nice to see that, you know, he's sort of growing up and he's sort of getting a bit of awareness about the world around him and getting involved in that. But also, I remember like 6 years ago, mate, when you were an insufferable arsehole.
6 years ago? I mean, the entire Rosberg era, you felt more inclined to cheer for Rosberg. And Rosberg's a bellend. He's just a boring... Boring dickhead. You only really like a bit like Jacques Villeneuve. You only really like Rosberg because his old man was cool. He has none of the same cool that his old man did. But you sort of think, well, yeah, whatever. I'll cheer for the dude whose old man was cool.
I did always respect Rosberg's exit, where he's just like, I won the world championship, I'm fucking done.
Yeah, the dropping the mic was such a good move. I respected that so much.
Listen, the cool guys don't look at explosions, just walked away.
Yes. Because he blew that fucking team up. They were all at each other's throats. The two sides of the garage were. It was almost getting to like Valentino Rossi, Jorge Lorenzo style late 2010s, where they built a wall down the middle of the garage because they just didn't want to talk to each other at all, because the two sides of the same team were just at fucking war. There was a bit like that. I think they were much gladder to have a slower dude in Bottas come in who kind of knew his place.
Yeah, and he absolutely, he still does know his place many years later. Yeah. So good on him, just cashing those checks. Yeah,
and occasionally getting upset that he's not fast enough, but then remembering, oh, nobody else is fast enough, so why are we worried? I was thinking about that in terms of the context, because there's been a lot of revision of Schumacher's career, particularly with the 1,000 Ferrari Grand Prix and all that sort of stuff, and that Sky did a big production number about Schumacher, because of course Schumacher himself wasn't there to turn up and wave to the kids because he's not capable of that sort of stuff. But they did have Mick, young Mick, son of, named after Mick Doohan, and apparently that's a fact. Mick Schumacher is named after Mick Doohan, and Mick Schumacher speaks English with as near a damn an Australian accent as I can tell. So I mean, he's clearly Michael's son. You can just tell by his head, but he's clearly spent a lot of time around Australians.
His head is very cute.
He's very. It was. You know, it's got that David Coulthard style. You know, hewn from a block of Lego. Yeah, Crichton. Yes, actually, I was gonna say hewn from a block of Lego, but no, that is very Crichton. But you know, Mick Schumacher is kind of like the reverse of the Jacques Villeneuve / Nico Rosberg situation. I like him in spite of his old man, because I obviously was no fan of his old man, but I'm kind of pulling for Mick, partly because his dad is in a terrible way, and you know, in a way, that's got to be worse than actually the dude actually being dead, because he's a constant reminder of the fact that he's in a terrible way, and you can't help him, and you can't, you know, stop his pain. So you know, I really feel for the kid, and everywhere he goes, people are asking about his fucking dad. And the family want to keep that as quiet as possible because they want their privacy, and that's entirely fair enough. But that must be so fucking hard to be 21 years old and have that name, that burden, and then having to go out and run your dad's fucking last championship-winning Ferrari around Mugello on the morning of the first Grand Prix in Mugello on Ferrari's 1,000th Grand Prix anniversary. That's a lot to lump on a kid. So I'm pulling for him.
Yeah, he's also a really handy driver off the back of all that, which is all absolutely true. I'm just looking at it. He's actually leading the Formula 2 championship at the moment. So,
I mean, he's with Prima, and Prima don't know how not to win a championship.
From Callum Ilott, who looks about 11.
Yeah. Oh, another.
Christian Lundgaard, who is very, very Scandinavian.
Yeah, but he's a mate of, apparently he's a mate of Andre Heimgardner's. Because they met because Heimgardner was because Heimgardner was with the Nissan team, and there was the Nissan connection with Renault. So somehow they've managed to meet. So they're iRacing mates.
Okay.
Because Heimgardner was racing. Heimgardner was racing in the, because the Formula One had one of those crappy, not an iRacing series. It was actually their arcade game. But Heimgardner popped up racing one of the Renault Formula One cars along with Longer, they were teammates in the Renault Formula One, the E Formula One team. I think it's because of this historic connection.
I watched the first episode of the Formula One video game series, and it had like Johnny Herbert just like bombing everyone at the first corner, just didn't break.
It was bad. It was no good at all. I mean, the only people who really did a good job was E Series. The V8 supercars actually did a really good job with that because they turned it into an event. And they covered it as though it was real, but they also didn't take it so seriously that they couldn't take the piss out of it. You couldn't have fucking Paul Morris's mutant fucking son in race control.
They kind of stopped about halfway through. They sort of when they stopped doing the reverse grid races, like that reverse grid race with it was at Montreal, and it had the two
Marcus Ambrose was there,
Joey Logano,
yes.
And was it Joey Logano as well? Started on reverse grid pole and just
forgot to leave.
The first 5 minutes of the reverse grid race was just like the funniest 5 minutes of television you're going to see, because you've got Crompton and Scaife are trying to take it really fucking seriously, but you've got two guys that didn't get off the light and everyone just bundling into each other and just not giving a fuck.
The best parts of the E-Series were the the celebrity race around Bathurst.
Oh, God!
Whatever Nick Percat did, because he had that practice crash where he went into space, and the footage they had of Neil Crompton getting upset at the celebrity race was hilarious. Of him just going completely old race driver and just chucking his toys. Fucking because apparently he had the V8 Supercars TV production, like the executive producer, Prendergast, was there on his shoulder trying to help him and guide him around the place. Just like, fucking Nathan, this is bullshit. I'm not fucking doing this. Bullshit, fucking. It's just being a complete
the celebrity
bell.
Race, Crompton losing his shit was like the highlight of that whole broadcast. He was so into it.
Yes, well, he couldn't not like, be into it because he just
couldn't grasp why people weren't taking it seriously. Like, it's not a serious matter.
Well, it becomes serious when you're getting beaten by Brad Jones, because apparently those two go back to like under eights Victorian motocross championships in the 70s. So they have some baggage that predates them sharing a HRT Commodore in the 90s. So,
I recall someone else also disappeared off into space.
There was a lot of space. Apparently, hit those cars right. Well, the spaces tend to be a thing.
The physics is really good until the cars leave the circuit, and then they have no.
There was
one iRacing series
actually did it the right way. It was the I don't know if you know the podcast Dinner with Racers. They organised a series whereby they just got deliberately more and more stupid. Like, they had a race for IndyCars around Bathurst, but it was in the dark. IndyCars notoriously don't have any headlights, so that was a problem. But for their grand final, what they had is they have two classes. They had everyone who'd won during the series got to race these trophy trucks, Baja 1000 style trophy trucks.
Oh, the super trucks.
Yeah. Well, no, they're even bigger than those. And they were racing around Belle Isle in Detroit. Everybody else who was in the racing league who didn't make the finals was racing in Nissan GTP sports cars the other way around the circuit, because they found out that a Nissan GTP sports car is from 1991 is a perfect ramp. So the idea was that these guys who were trying to race for the championship had to race around while trying to navigate these mobile jumps that were coming at them from the other way. So it was like a jumping truck race, but the jumps keep moving. This is what iRacing is made for. It's the entire fucking point. Because you can do shit like that. The other good iRacing league was LCQ, which is the last chance qualifier league, because all these guys, a whole bunch of IndyCar guys and rallycross guys were required by their sponsors to race in this iRacing rallycross series, and they hated it and they sucked at it, and they always ended up in the last chance qualifier at the end. And they're like, well, this sucks. Let's just have our own league. So they built this LCQ league. And it's like Alexander Rossi and James Hinchcliffe and Connor Daly and Travis Pastrana and a whole bunch of freestyle motocross guys like Bilko Williams. Chad Reed was in it. And they would just meet up on iRacing and race the most fucking ridiculous shit they could find. Like, they were racing midget sprint cars around the Oran Park short circuit. Not the normal circuit you'd expect, but there's like a tiny little figure of eight you can do that just goes over the bridge and then straight back again.
Oh, the back half of the circuit.
Yeah, not the bit that has the bridge. So it's just this tiny little figure of eight. And so they were just racing these ridiculous circuits, because the idea was that you'd only get like 10 minutes of practice. You wouldn't know what the car was, and you wouldn't know what the circuit was. So you'd just get deposited in the middle of these places and have to figure it out in 10 minutes and then go racing. So these are the only two groups of people who figured out what to do with iRacing. And I'm glad to see that nobody gives a shit about iRacing now, that actual racing is here in ridiculous oversupply.
It is. There is a lot of it on all the time.
Yes. In fact, it's on right now.
Is it? What's on right now?
MotoGP practice is on right now.
I just finished, so.
Hyperpoly, I'm going to pronounce it as. Hyperpole.
No, Hyperpoly is
yes.
over. The bad Toyota is on.
Bad Toyota, naughty Toyota. Bad Toyota can go to its room. But that's all right. That's what you'd expect. And hopefully bad Le Mans will be over and we can have a good one again and everyone can actually turn up, the Corvettes and all that sort of stuff.
Did you watch the video game Le Mans?
I didn't watch the e-racing one. I did watch the Dinner with Races version where they got like wing sprint cars, which only have like two gears, and they ran the old Le Mans circuit with no chicanes. This was one of the earlier rounds. This wasn't the final. So they tapped out at like 85 miles an hour. Just and I think the other cars in the race were like...
For 4 minutes while they go down the Mulsanne without chicanes.
The other cars in the field were like Porsche 919s or something. So they would just go... And you have these fucking... They'd go past them like they were literally turtles. Just these dots on the old Mulsanne with no chicanes. Just... Just sit there for 5 minutes, just rattling the thing to death. And of course, these things have stagger, so they're constantly trying to lean over and turn to one side. They keep trying to turn left. So.
You're sort of holding it constantly at 45 to your right, just trying
to. I'm out the window. Just
keep the thing in a straight line.
So these people understood what you know. As I say, these people understood what the series was for. Oh, they raced at the Nürburgring, but they raced at the smallest possible Nürburgring. There's like a little rallycross track.
The sprint circuit.
No, not even that. It's like at the bottom of the sprint circuit. There's like this little kind of drumstick shaped track that is apparently just they're using it as the basis for a rallycross track that they're having the world championship, and they were racing like ridiculously like Porsche 919s and BMW M6 GT3s around this tiny little circuit with one corner so tight you almost need to take a 3-point turn. So, So that was more fun than...
Oh, so Tim Schenken designed it.
Yes, yeah. No, that's a Scaife job. Scaife would take credit for that one. It was like the the Canberra track. Was the one that Scaife was very proud of that it's actually shit? One of the other street circuits.
Townsville?
Townsville's all right as a race circuit. Like, there's a couple of places to pass. I think it actually races reasonably well. But then again, you can't take credit for that.
Yeah, you get that good run down into that hard right off the main straight. It's like it's technically turn four or something
by
the time you
that big
get
sweeper
there.
At the bottom of the circuit where they have to go over the crown in the main road because they're coming across it at basically perpendicular to it.
Yeah, they go across the sort of two lane thing, and you see them have the big bang.
Yeah, they have the big they bottom out it. And then they go over the rise. That really upsets them. So it kind of makes them and you can always see when a car's got more grip there because that's where Van Gisbergen was making all these moves in the races that he won that weekend, including where he accidentally ran a bit deep under brakes getting past our friend Jandals, and that's where Jandals wants to run away and move to another country. I reckon that's us. That was a fun motorsport nerd pod, even though there hasn't been that much motorsport and then suddenly there was far too much of it. I've been the Doc, that's been Matt. Do you have anything you want to plug?
No.
Plug your phone back in, that's about all.
I'll plug my phone back in, I'll get my phone charged. No. I'm not on the internet.
No,
so
he's never been on the internet, and he is very angry with any suggestion that he is. And we will talk to you again next week. Well, we won't. I will talk to you again next week, and I'll have somebody else with me. Probably Bezo. Say goodnight.
Goodnight.